Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 219 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom indeed, folks. Boom indeed. We've got a great show for you midweek this week. I know, it's a special one, right? Because we weren't around to have something ready for you. That's right. I was on vacation. I was on vacation and it was so great. It was so wonderful. Oh my God. It was the first vacation I've been able to take in about 2 years. And me and the whole family went down to Palm Springs, California. Actually, we vacationed in a retirement community. Yeah. Yeah, man. Let's see. First thoughts on arriving there. It was beautiful. It was very quiet, and I will never not vacation in a retirement community ever again. I think that's our vacations from now on. Just be in a retirement community because it's so friggin' laid back. It's amazing. Yeah, that's right. We had a pool right outside the front door. We're staying in this condo that my mom's cousin owns. It was great, man. We went down there with my parents. And have free babysitters the whole time. It was amazing. It was amazing. So now that I'm a parent, we're never not going to a retirement community for vacation. That's going to be our vacations from now on. That's it. That's who I am. I am a lame man. It's just horrible, right? Oh my God. Hearing myself say that is very sad. It's very sad. If 25-year-old me could hear 35-year-old me say that, man, he'd be crushed. 25-year-old me would be crushed. We've got a great show planned for you guys this week. Once again, sorry it's going up so late. But our friends, good friends of mine, Kevin Doddrell from the Stack of Dimes podcast, and Luke Burbank from Livewire, and Wait, Don't Tell Me, and TBTL is going to be joining us on the line. And we have a fantastic chat, and I hope you guys really enjoy it. We're just going to get right into it here, folks. But first, before we go with our first musical break, we want to tell you guys about #HashOfTheTitans. #HashOfTheTitans going on next week. This is something that I'm associated with. We'll be tweeting out. It's being put on by the great people of Do206.com and also of Goose Island. Goose Island Beer. Have you guys heard of Goose Island? Man, it's really, really great stuff. And what they're doing is they want to send you to Lollapalooza 2015 in Brazil. Yeah, that's right. You heard me correctly. Brazil, guys. That's right. Yeah. 2015 Lollapalooza in Brazil. They want to send you there. One grand prize winner receives airfare, hotel room, and VIP fest tickets for two people. That's right. That's right. So all you have to do, follow me on Twitter at AirRaidNet. Follow Goose Island Beer Company on Twitter at Goose Island, and also follow Do206 on Twitter as well. And then. What we're going to do is, let's see, Goose Island's going to put out their, you know, hashtag pirate TV shows, for example. And, let's see, we this example here, folks, pirate TV shows, kind of like that game Midnight, right? Midnight does this on Comedy Central. Goose Island is, dipping their toe into, this whole hashtag game as well. It's very easy. And you come up with some sort of, some funny, you know, hashtag or funny, funny pirate TV show. Like Orange is the New Blackbeard, right? You get it. You get it. You're savvy people. And then one grand prize winner going to win two tickets, an airfare and hotel, all expenses paid, down to Brazil in 2015 for Lollapalooza. That's a pretty good deal, folks. So get on it, right? Follow Air Raid at Air Raid Net. Follow Do206 and follow Goose Island. And, you know, do the hashtag challenge, man. Hashtag challenge. That's not what it's called. It's Hash of the Titans. Do that and enter yourself to win. There's also going to be some daily prizes that are given out, and that's all coming up next week. So stay tuned, okay? All righty. To find out more about it, you can follow us on Twitter, of course, and follow us on Facebook, the Air Raid Podcast, on there on the Facebooks, and get some more info. Also, please visit our website, www.air-raid.net. Click on the Archives tab, and you can listen to all 219 episodes with people like, or bands like Mudhoney, or Death Cab for Cutie, or Macklemore. Yeah, that's right, Macklemore. And comedians, how about Pete Holmes? How about Ian Carmel, who we're going to talk about here in a little bit? How about Mike Birbiglia? Yeah, right? All great stuff right there for you at air-raid.net. Bob Saget, Jim Brewer, all there, man, all there. Mudhoney, Presidents of the United States of America, yeah. Eddie Pepitone, man, Surfer Blood, all there. Red Fang, all there on the Archives tab at www.air-raid.net. Okay, let's get into it, shall we? Let's go with our first musical break. Let's see. Let's play some Spoon. Let's play some Spoon. We haven't listened to this for a while. This one's called The Underdog, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears when we return with Luke Burbank and Kevin Dodrell. All right. Be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Picture yourself in a living room. Your pipe and slippers set out for you. I know you think that it ain't too far. But I hear a call of a lifetime ring. Felt the need to get up for it. Oh, you caught out the middleman. Get free from the middleman. You got no time for the messenger. Got no regard for the thing that you don't understand. You got no fear of the underdog. That's why you will not survive. I wanna forget how convention fits, but can I get out from under it? Can I cut it out of me? Oh, it can't all be wedding cake. It can't all be boiled away. I try, but I can't let go of it. Can't let go of it. Cause you don't talk to the water boy. And there's so much you could learn, but you don't wanna know. You will not back up an inch of it. That's why you will not survive. Tell you now, it may not go over well. Oh, and it may not be for the while. No way that I spell it out. But you won't hear from the messenger. Don't wanna know about something that you don't understand. You got no fear of the underdog. That's why you will not survive.
welcome back on the show, Luke. It's been some time, sir.
I'm honored and glad to be on the show. I like to think of the Air Raid podcast as the show that is constantly getting guests that I meant to try to get on. And I know about it because each week I see your feed and I see who you got on. I'm always impressed, Aaron, and I always kick myself because I often think, I didn't know that person was doing interviews, so good on you. You always put together a quality show.
Well, you taught me how to lie to people really, really well.
Yeah, that's a real, that's a sort of foundational thing for TVTL, so I'm glad that the torch was passed.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And Kevin Doddrell joining us once again here in the backyard. Hello, sir.
This is started.
This
is rolling right now.
We're just going right now.
Usually have like fancy pants intros, all sorts of stuff. Like
I can't
even talk tonight. I don't even know what's wrong with
me. I'm going to edit all of this out, and it's just going to be me and Luke, apparently.
Because he can't hear me anyway, so who, you know, why not?
Is that Tatum talking?
Well, welcome, guys. Luke Burbank, of course, of the TBTL podcast, and also the Fancy Pants new NPR show, Live Wire. Right?
Yeah.
That's been getting picked up. It's all over the place now, right?
Yeah. Where our big thing is that we just got added on WBEZ in Chicago, which is
right.
Which is a big you know, advancement for us, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's 10 o'clock on Monday night, so. Watch out, Chicago.
Is that where you're going?
Monday nights at 10 will never be the same.
That's right. All right. Is that where you're going to Chicago tomorrow, or are you doing Wait, Wait again?
I am doing Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on Thursday night, but because I now live in basically the middle of nowhere, a.k.a. the small maritime village of Port Townsend, I have to get a really early start on going to Chicago because basically – and I plan tonight, Roden, to bring some of the incredibly boring esoterica from TBTL. I plan to bring it over and infect your show, not unlike a nurse who didn't properly wear gloves during an Ebola patient treatment. But
how many times have you used that joke today, that metaphor?
I haven't used it at all. Had I used it before, I would have not botched it horribly. It would have flown out of my mouth and into the iPods of everyone listening to this, as if anyone's listening on an iPod. Isn't that hilarious? We used to have iPods. That joke I've used over 30 times today, by the way.
What's the deal with that?
No, but I was going to say, I have to – so the boring details of this show called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me that I – and one of the panelists on in Chicago is that it tapes on Thursday nights, but they're really, really, really paranoid about the panelists showing up. So they book you, if you're flying from the West Coast, on the first available flight, which is at like 5:30 a.m., so that if that flight is canceled and then the 7:30 a.m. is canceled and it's like the 9 flights throughout the day are canceled, you will still make one of them. So it means getting to SeaTac Airport super early, which I would have to leave my house at like 3:30 in the morning or something, or 3 in the morning. So I now go on Wednesday nights and stay an extra night there just so I'll actually be there.
I actually heard that that's the Luke Burbank effect. And it basically, if you miss your flight, that show will be ruined. It will implode without you being there. That's what I heard. That's why you get like 2 days there beforehand.
They definitely, you know, they know what side their bread is buttered on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I make a lot of pretty hilarious Ebola jokes when I'm on the show. A lot of times I try to workshop them on lesser podcasts.
But go ahead and fall
really
back on that iPod joke.
Wait. So I appreciate you guys being part of the process.
Go back and fall back on that iPod joke, though, if you need to.
Isn't that true, though? Like, I think of what people listen to our kinds of shows of, whether it's SOD or Air Raid or TBTL, I think of it as people listening on an iPod, but that's, like, ridiculous now, right?
Yeah, it's just, it's phones. Any type of phone, right?
But, I mean, it's the same thing, let's be honest.
I mean, I mean, isn't it weird how quickly the iPod became comically old-fashioned? I feel like it had less of a shelf life than, like, a Sony Walkman.
Well, it's definitely the term iPod has outlasted
yes.
the actual physical brick.
I'm just trying to think of the last time I saw someone using an iPod.
Probably in my Saab.
2 years ago, probably maybe three. It was like that was still white hot technology, and it just went. It didn't have sort of a slow fade. It just was like all of a sudden that was like my mom is the my mom has all of this Christian music and like AA meetings on her iPod that she still listens to. But that's like the last person in America using an iPod.
You can listen to an AA meeting on an iPod?
That and Frank McCourt books on tape. That's pretty much my mom's jam out there in Silverdale, Washington.
Well, hey, before we get into the topic that I wanted to chat with you guys about, I had this interesting run-in on Twitter recently, and Luke, I wanted to get your take on this, and Kevin, I want to get your take as well. Luke, you had somewhat of a run-in concerning what, like Gamergate, right? Due to your last CBS appearance or something.
Yeah, but those are I only feel like it's necessary to clarify because I didn't even know what Gamergate was until I also got into some kind of a fight with the Video Game Players of America. But my gate was a different gate with them. So first off, okay, Gamergate is this sort of basically like some women who like video games said that they dared to say a lot of these video games are pretty like not great for women. You know, the parts about getting shot in the face and being prostitutes. And a lot of the guys who like playing video games didn't like hearing that, and so then they went really crazy and started like posting these death threats.
Okay, yeah.
That's Gamergate?
That's it. Yeah, that's basically
that's
Gamergate.
That's Gamergate. That's the biggie.
Okay.
A smaller gate, mostly well-known only to me, was that I did a TV commentary where I talked about this thing called Twitch, which is just like a really, really popular website where people, it's basically like a social media site, but one of the big things there is you watch other people play video games or you play a video game and you kind of set it so that other people can watch you play. And to be totally honest with you, I was mostly just, I have to write a lot of these commentaries and I don't have very many good ideas. So I was looking through the news and I saw that Amazon had paid $1 billion for this thing called Twitch that lets people watch other people play video games. And I just thought of like one lame joke, which was, why would you want to watch other people waste their time? And then I just wrote a commentary kind of around that stupid idea, but it really made people mad. And what I learned about this is that a lot of the people who are really heavy duty into gaming, and I actually think Gamergate, the other thing, has also really reinforced this, is a lot of the people who played a lot of video games in their life also heard throughout their life that they were losers for liking video games.
Sure.
And they found this community of other people who like the same stuff, and they're not losers, but they feel this really strong attachment to the games and to the people they know through the games. It's a big part of their life. And then having me come in by way of CBS television and say, you should be doing something else, I think it just hit a bunch of raw nerves.
Yeah.
So that a lot of people texted me things like, in Spanish, son of a prostitute, you should get cancer and die, which was an actual tweet I received among maybe hundreds of others.
How is CBS still like capable of making everything look like from the 1980s, by the way? That thing looks so old. Like they just set you up in front of a VHS beta cam and with like a no background and just let you go buck wild. Like what? That's,
you know what? When I was recording that commentary, I was down in LA, and the CBS lot used to be where you'd do these. Was it a thing called Television City, which was also where they did like NCIS 1 through 7.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
By the way, this is also not a joke that I have yet deployed on the world, but it occurred to me as I was watching football on Sunday. And
oh, CBS. Watching football on CBS is the worst.
It was awful.
What's that?
Watching CBS football is the worst because of the crappy shows that they just beat you over the head with. It's worse, way worse than Fox.
It's pretty much, well, okay, so here's what Fox has locked down. All of the shows about sexy headless horsemen who have come back but still kind of want to fuck. but are confused by the modern world. That's their genre. And then the CBS genre is lady politicians be not taking that shit anymore.
Right.
It's like an entire network based on the experience of Hilda Spitzer, which is Elliot Spitzer's wife. but what I was going to say is like,
NCIS, CSI,
yeah, some sort of phony,
he was saying
crime scene investigation.
Oh yeah. How is it that basically LL Cool J and Ice-T are the people we are now relying on to solve almost all crimes in America? Like, the two least likely to be crime-solving people probably you could ever think of, and that's who it's pretty much come down to, Chris O'Donnell and LL Cool J. That's on the NCIS Los Angeles side of things. And then on the Special Victims Unit side, you're pretty much relying on Ice-T.
I'll see your Chris O'Donnell and raise you a Mark Harmon.
Well, I'll see your Harmon. I'll raise you a Scott Bakula, who is now apparently helming the most successful television show in America, according to CBS, which is NCIS New Orleans. I don't know if the N, which would be naval, if the N is patrolling the canals. What is the waterway that they're even in charge of in New Orleans?
That's a really great. It's not like that. Nobody's quantum leaping in New Orleans, right?
Oh
yeah.
Boy!
Yeah, yeah. Well, so you got attacked on Twitter recently. I got attacked much smaller attack on myself. But I wanted to read you guys this because I'm not sure what really transpired here. And I don't know if it maybe was a joke or if it was something serious or, you know, if I need to learn some Twitter etiquette. So can I read through this Twitter feed really quick for you here, Luke?
I'm all ears.
Okay. So this was a comedian, a rather famous one that has been on the show before.
Louis Anderson?
Louis Anderson. You know, the guy with the
Gallagher?
The huge gap between his teeth, that guy.
Okay.
He tweeted something out. I follow his girlfriend, and his girlfriend retweeted something of his. And his tweet said, the wind is knocking over a bunch of these trees in Portland, but me moving to L.A. is what robbed them of their will to stand. And so there's another comedian, a very funny guy, Shane Torres, who I think you know about, right?
Who's the other one?
This is Ian Carmel.
Ian Carmel, right. He works on the Chelsea Handler show now, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that's been canceled. It no longer works on that one. But okay. So I thought it would be funny to insert Shane Torres because he just moved away from Portland to L.A., and I thought it would be funny to say, oh, no, it's the will was removed by Shane Torres instead of Ian Carmel. So I replied, ooh, sorry, it was because of Syrup Mountain's move, sorry. Kind of funny, right? Not really funny?
Funny and not particularly. I wouldn't, if I were Carmel, I don't think I would take that the wrong way. I wouldn't
take
imagine.
Offense to it.
Okay, so this is what happened next. This is the reply from Ian Carmel said, jump out my timeline if you don't follow me on Twitter, podcast.
What does that mean?
How am I supposed to take that?
I don't think there was any animosity there.
You don't think so?
No.
Jump out of my timeline, meaning don't talk to me, don't send a tweet to me that gums up my timeline if you don't follow me?
I guess so.
Huh.
Or don't reply to any of my tweets if you don't follow me on Twitter?
Oh, see, I didn't even get that. I'm out of it. This whole Twitter game for me.
I see. So in other words, do you follow the guy on Twitter?
No. Do I have to?
You somehow saw this tweet from
him. I saw it because his girlfriend retweeted and I follow his girlfriend.
I see. So
well, you follow
like
his girlfriend and not him.
Because she's cool. She's nice. She's nice and she follows me as well. So I follow her.
Why don't you follow him?
I don't know.
Does he follow you?
I thought he was dating Chelsea Handler.
Yeah.
I side with him on this one.
You side with him on this one? This is bullshit. Then Shane Torres rides back. writes in, I have no idea what's going on here. And then Ian Carmel replies, fuck boys.
He's said, fuck boy?
Fuck boys, Shane. He's referring to me as a fuckboy. So now I have to go to Urban Dictionary and look up what the term fuckboy means. And it means punk-ass bitch.
He could... Was that what it means?
Yeah, it means punk-ass bitch.
That's funny. I thought it probably meant champion. Or conqueror.
Maybe he
Well, very close.
This is a diss.
Maybe he was just like on a raging coke bender and he just you know, went off on you or something. I don't... You can't really read into that crap. Crap on Facebook and Twitter. You
what
can't.
What time?
It ruined my day.
What was the first tweet about get out of my timeline?
Let's see. I don't know. It was
won't
just
tell you?
It was a couple days ago. No, it doesn't.
Because,
it doesn't give me
it
times.
It was late at night.
No. It was during the day. It was like maybe like 10 o'clock, 10 a.m., 11 a.m. Maybe.
You had him on the show before.
I had him on the show. We had a great conversation. He was super nice. We hung out in the green room for like 2 hours.
So then why would you think that he means anything by this? Maybe he's just being smart at... I mean, you're very sensitive.
I am. I'm super sensitive.
Like if Luke wouldn't have answered his phone, you'd have been obsessing over it the whole time while I was on the show.
Don't say that when Luke's on the phone.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I'm this guy...
Don't
is,
tell him that.
I think Luke is aware of that. I think all aware of that. We're friends with you. I mean, I think you're just a little sensitive. And then on Twitter? I mean,
Guys, it ruined my day.
That's what I'm
this
saying.
This is my personal nightmare.
That's what I'm saying.
great.
Just trying, I'm scrolling through all of Ian Carmel's other tweets right now, trying to get back to the... I want to get back to the source on this.
You're going all the way back in the timeline of
you're
things.
You're doing the research.
Well, what's interesting is... he's using that fuckboy as of 6:18 a.m., which is very early to use the word fuckboy. 6:18 a.m. on the 26th, he says, fuckboy in my lap, all flight, full lean back, goddamn doofus. If you recognize this back of the head, and then he sends a picture of somebody's head, somebody who had, I guess, reclined their seat.
Right.
Tell me, what was that tweet again? Fuckboy what? Back...
Fuckboy in my lap all flight, full lean back, goddamn doofus. If you recognize this back of the head, please slap his Republican face. Which is a lot of there's a lot of assumptions going on here. One,
right.
People aren't allowed to ever lean back on the flight. Two,
right.
The guy is a Republican. Maybe that's clear to Carmel on the flight, and maybe it's just sort of left out of the tweets. There weren't enough characters. Plus, you know how when you, like, retweet a picture, you lose some characters?
Yes.
So you had even less to work with.
What kind of goddamn game is that?
Caps. I don't know.
It sounds like he's just, maybe he's going through a tough period.
Yeah,
I think he's
dealing
angry.
With some shit right now. Maybe the fact that things crumbled between him and Chelsea Handler.
I was going to say, I mean... If you're a comedian, try to be funny on Twitter instead of angry. I mean, seriously, like that was a horrible
great.
Tweet. The one that you just read about the fuck boy leaning his seat. It's like,
yeah.
Can you even be kind of funny? That's not even funny. Tell him Camaro Kev at Camaro _ Kev says that. Can you do that for me?
No, man. I'm never tweeting at Ian Carmel ever again. I don't. I'm done.
You need to take back the night road.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want me to get together, we could do some kind of a march or something.
Well, this is a perfect segue, because this is something like this happening is like my ultimate nightmare. Like being called out in some sort of like, you know, public forum is a complete nightmare for me. I do not want to be known as a fuckboy. So where I wanted to ask you guys, like, what's your personal nightmare? You know, we do have a holiday coming up that deals a lot with nightmares and scary things, and I want to hear from you guys. What scares Camaro Kev? What scares Luke Burbank? Who wants to go first?
A little heads up would have been nice, man, before I go on.
Did we lose Luke?
I don't think.
Fuckboy.
You're allowing fuckboy to go. Bad decision. Because I was hoping you'd go.
I'm very, very afraid of sharks. Not in an ironic way, but in a when I was briefly living in Florida, and my daughter was out there with me for the summer, and we went to Daytona Beach. She loves the ocean, and she was standing probably waist deep in the, I guess that would be the Atlantic Ocean on that side.
Yeah.
And I was, she was like, you know, 11 or 12, and I was standing there with her, but I didn't want to go any deeper than my ankles because I thought, if I go knee deep and a shark goes for me, that would be like plenty of, like, that would be plenty of my leg under the water for them to work with.
You'd be done.
I was just like, felt like it was, they could do some real damage. So I wanted to stay as much out of the water as I could, but then I needed to be in the water a little bit because if a riptide grabbed my daughter, I needed to be ready to go after her. And I spent probably an hour or two standing in the crystal blue waters and the white sands of Daytona Beach, Florida, trying to have the minimum amount of my feet in the water, obsessively thinking about if I was going to get attacked by a shark.
Are you being serious?
Being total, 100% serious.
So does this fear come from watching the movie Jaws?
No, I've never even seen the movie Jaws.
You haven't?
No, in fact, I feel like I was about to have this dream last night, and then I woke up before, but I have two recurring, well, I have like three recurring stress dreams or terrible dreams. One of them is shark-related. It's, I'm in some kind of like vantage point, like I'm on a kind of a beach, but I can look down into the water, and it looks like this normal, beautiful water, but when I look straight down, I can see that it's just teeming with sharks. And I was about to swim in the water, or people are swimming, and I'm freaked out because what I can see in the water is that it's just shark-ridden. And then the other one I have, which is not shark-related, and it's not a fear, but it's I did have this one last night, is you really have to go to the bathroom, and you go in a public restroom, and all of the toilets are overflowing with disgusting diarrhea feces. You guys ever had that dream?
I have never had that dream. I've experienced it in
real life. My wife
looked
it up on a website for me.
And what does it mean when she looked it up? What does it mean?
I'm too busy cruising Ian Carmel's Instagram, which is just him and people who are more famous than him.
How funny is it? That's what I want.
Not funny at all. It's just pictures of him standing near people who are well-known, which to me is the lowest form of Instagram. What is the my wife just walked in. Carrie, what is the pooping, the toilets are overflowing dream mean? Do you want to know what was crazy about this dream I had last night? It wasn't that the toilet was overflowing. It's that there was like an ashtray in the stall, kind of like on an airplane.
Uh-huh.
How they used to have those ashtrays in a little armrest.
Yeah.
It was one of those, and lids. It was overflowing with shit.
And the crazier thing is you woke up in a big pile of your own poo.
Well, that's most nights.
I
think Carrie's looking it up right now.
I have – mine is just I need to pee really bad, and I can't find – any place to go. I'm always looking for, like, I'll go around this corner and I'll be private. And then, no, there's someone standing there. And then, so, like, the whole dream is that whole trying to find a place just to take a leak. I'm surprised.
Right. I've had that before.
Surprised I don't wake up, like, you know, like pissing on my TV or something. You know?
I know you're all dying. Most of the listeners are dying to know. This is what dreammoods.com says about this.
Dream
if you clog toilet in your dream, it suggests you are holding and keeping your feelings to yourself. You guys know that about me. I keep a lot of stuff in. I have a really difficult time just getting it off my chest. Your emotions have been pent up too long, and you need to let go of the negative feelings. To see an overflowing or flooded toilet in your dream denotes your desires to fully express your emotions. This is why I don't believe in dream interpretation, by the way, because there's nobody on the planet who is expressing their emotion. Other than Ian Carmel, there's nobody on the planet who's expressing their emotions more all the time than me, for better or for worse, mostly worse.
Yeah, I don't buy into that nonsense.
I don't buy into it either. Look up this one. I don't know even how you'd describe it, but there's one dream that I've had ever since I was a child. Like,
okay.
It's a fever dream. It's whenever I'm like super sick and have like the flu or something worse, right? And I will always dream that I'm laying in bed, and
what?
I'm laying in bed, and the bed kind of is extending, like in those horror movies, like in like you know,
Poltergeist,
Nightmare on Elm Street, or something like that, and like the alleyway like just gets longer and longer and longer. You know, so my bed is doing that.
Is that like the whole move where they're pushing the camera while zooming out at the same
yes.
time, and it does that whole
I believe so.
Freaky effect? They use it in Jaws, and they use it like they'll show a hallway, and then they do that effect, and it looks like it's getting longer, but not.
Yes,
but
yeah, yeah. But you're still getting closer to the
called.
Object that
yeah.
you're zooming
okay.
in on. And then so it's my bed is getting longer like that, and then I'm shrinking down, and I have this blanket. I used to have this blanket that was like
oh,
like a heavy wool. Right? And uh-huh. then all of a sudden on this blanket, there's all these little kind of like weird goblin-y gnomes that are kind of just ice skating on my wool blanket. And that is like since I was a little kid, and it just freaks me out to no end.
Well, here's what it says about bedspreads.
Okay.
To notice or buy bedspread in your dream represents your open sexuality and outward beauty. The design and look of the bedspread may be a clue into what you are looking for sexually.
Hmm. So just a regular tan wool bedspread
yeah. with gnomes
says a lot about my sexuality.
No mention of the gnomes coming into play on that one?
No mention of gnomes, oddly. To dream that you are floating or lifting up into the air from your bed suggests that you are feeling helpless and disconnected from those around you. Your ideas may be alienating people, like Ian Carmel. It's weird they would have that on this website. That's
so specific.
Yeah, you might need to tone down your personality a bit, is what that one says.
Well, here's what's... I'll tell you what I'm afraid of.
Oh, you got something?
I'm afraid of going on a podcast and a guy asking me a question that I'm totally unprepared for and then not having any sort of story to go along with it. That's what I'm afraid of, and I'm living it right now.
Living your nightmare. Don't worry, I'll cut all this out.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
It'll all be gone. It'll all be gone. What are you guys doing for Halloween? You guys do anything special for that? You do the you dress up as adults?
I'm going to Chicago tomorrow, but then on Friday I'm going down to Portland, and my wife and I are going to take our two nephews, who are aged 4 and 2, trick-or-treating, and I was kind of thinking about dressing up, but then I remembered that I'm a heterosexual man, and then I just remembered I wasn't going to do that.
Do you know, you guys don't ever feel the need to create a costume during Halloween?
I can tell you that I hate going to any sort of costume parties, especially
yeah.
if they're like a house party, costume party.
Yeah, why?
I'm just too lazy. And usually what it comes down to is like I'm busy, I'm lazy, and the night before I'm scrambling to find something to wear. So for probably the last 5 years in a row, I've been Indiana Jones just because I have all the gear to do it. But now I've used it so many times
uh-huh.
that I can't use it anymore. I've gone to pretty much everyone's party with it at this point.
Well, here's what you do. Here's what you do is you improve upon it every year, right? You get something that's maybe a little bit more high quality. You get a little more high quality hat or something like that.
Did you miss the first part where I said I'm lazy and I usually don't have the time to go out and do this?
It doesn't take any time, man. It's like once a year you see something in a store, you say, hey, that would be perfect for that costume for next Halloween. And you get it.
Do you?
That's it.
Are you dressing up?
I haven't done it for a really long time.
No.
I'm saving up my money to buy a professionally made Boba Fett costume, and then that's what I'm going to be for
Christ.
every Halloween every year. Because
Kevin,
you can't.
Do you remember
that time we
went to the Backdoor Ultra Lounge and I was Richard Simmons?
Absolutely, I got Polaroids at home of it.
Well,
I mean, I got rid of those.
Could I please, first of all, kill whatever I weighed then? I would kill to weigh that. I don't even know, but I just assumed, like, we've probably talked about this before, but it's like the worst picture of you, give it 10 years, and you would fucking kill that to be what your reality
was. Oh,
sure.
So true.
Sure.
So true.
You know? So I'm sure in those days I was just like, oh, what's up, Burbank? But I'm just like, God, I wish I could get back to my Richard Simmons weight. The worst part of that night, I mean, it was a really fun night, but the bummer part was I lost that damn headshot I had.
You had an autographed headshot of Richard Simmons.
Yeah, I was carrying around. I don't know what, I guess I was to just reinforce who I was, but I had on the shorts and the whole outfit and a wig that I had made. And
That is an odd,
it was a big hit, but I was also just really housed. So I don't know if, like, maybe it was terrible. What do you remember of that night?
Well, that is odd that you bring that up, because I do remember you had the signed headshot.
How did you get the signed headshot? Was it yours?
When I worked at a radio station, he was a guest, and he signed a headshot for me. Slash, I think, was hitting on me.
Which was it was impressive that you had the headshot, but you are correct. Why would Richard Simmons be carrying an autographed headshot of himself around to show people, to remind them?
He was doing the Luke Burbank version of his
himself.
The great
part of that was, and Kevin, you probably experienced this, because you have worked in the past with Mr. Kirby Wilbur.
Sure,
from
yeah.
KVI. Uh-huh. I was Kirby Wilbur's producer, and he loved Richard Simmons, which just seemed really unusual for a conservative talk AM morning show to be really into Richard Simmons. But I think it was because, first and foremost, Kirby just wanted to be around famous people, and Richard Simmons qualified as a famous person. And Richard Simmons came in, and he put his hand on my chest, and he started, like, tapping my chest to the beat of what he thought my heart was. And that was probably the closest I've ever come to going gay. Because there was something so comforting, and he smelled good, and he was just like, if ever a girl in my whole life had ever looked at me with the excitement that Richard Simmons looked at me with in that moment, I would be so pumped. And I think I was just like, I might be able to make this work. This guy loves me.
It is funny that you mention the, you know, conservative talk show host loving this guy.
That's so closeted, by the way.
You know, Richard for the longest time wouldn't talk about his sexuality. And
Does he now?
I don't even know. I don't think I've ever seen him openly talk about his sexuality ever. Have you, Luke?
Especially early on. I think he has ever talked about it.
I think he would avoid it. And then early on, you know, back, what was that? Like probably 97 you were producing that show?
Probably. No. It was later than that. It was like, because I went to college in 95 and I didn't get that job till after college. So it would have been like 99 or something.
Because I could totally see someone like Richard Simmons coming into a conservative talk station and because he's never talked about his sexuality before, just the host like Kirby going like, what a nice gentleman that Richard is. What a lovely man he is. And just not even realizing, like, you know what? I don't know.
Willful ignorance.
Yeah, like yes. Like if you're not going to talk about it, then I'm going to pretend things are just hunky-dory and you're not a heathen who's going to burn in hell, you know?
What I think is interesting about, and not that anybody, except for maybe the three of us, cares at all about a psychological profiling of Kirby Wilbur, but I think is so interesting about it is that, like, that I think shows how much Kirby valued being near the orbit of people who were well known.
Of celebrity.
Is that this guy who was clearly half a fruit, like, who had zero, the overlap of his life and his stuff and what we would do, you know, 9 days out of 10 on the KVI morning show. There was no overlap whatsoever. But it's like, oh, he's famous, get him on. Like,
right.
Oh, he's famous,
sure.
He's down the
yeah.
hall talking to Kent and Allen. Like, let's get him on. And, like, that's interesting to me because it's like he could have been – I mean, he did almost – you're right. He never talked about his sexuality, but to anybody with two eyes and a brain, he was
right.
clearly a homosexual man, which was – really the antithesis of everything that morning show that I worked on stood for, really. And yet it was like, well, but he's a famous gay, so we should definitely have
right.
him down.
I'm slowly realizing that I am the Kirby Wilbur of podcasts.
Who's the person you've had on?
I love these silences. It's so rad. I was just going to keep going, too.
Aaron, who's the person that you've had on that you most regret, not most regret having on, but like who was on strictly because they were well known?
This should
be
pretty
easy.
Don't
worry about it because they'll probably never come on again anyway. So
don't worry
about burning any bridges.
No, I'm not. I don't think I'm going to. I think the bridge has already burned, but it's going to be, let's see. I'm trying to think of a different one. One came to mind immediately. It was Hari Kondabolu.
Because he showed up like 2 hours late or something.
Yeah,
right?
It was 2 hours late, and then yelled at me for a little while.
Over what?
During the show. Well, I was just talking to him about his life. Like, you know, I didn't. My listeners probably didn't know a lot about Hari Kondabolu, except for the ones that also listen to your show, Luke. So I was just kind of talking about his life, and that's kind of what my show is, you know? It's just like, you know, tell your story. And he did not want to tell his story, apparently, because what he told me or yelled at me on air, by the way.
Did you leave it in?
Yeah, I left it in. Yeah, and he came across as kind of a dick. You know, yelled at me. He was like, why don't you just do a Google search?
And he wasn't even, it wasn't like a smart ass joke.
He was irate almost. Yeah. But that was a very, very uncomfortable. And that was like, I didn't even really think he was that funny. Somebody had reached out to me and said, you should have him on. He's in town. And so,
but I mean, did he qualify as somebody who you were like, well, he's famous, so I should have him on? Because I'm curious about, not even people you had a bad experience with, but people who were just like, see, because
I really don't want to have this guy on, but he's famous, so I'm just going to do it and get it over with, sort of thing?
I think I have had that experience, but it's not coming to mind. But I know I have had that experience, yeah.
But what about, like, when you had Macklemore on?
That
has to be an example of that, right?
Maybe a little bit, but I actually, you know, when he was getting big, that was before he really was big, though.
I was going to say that was kind of actually how I really had heard about him was, so he hadn't even entered my orbit, so you know the guy wasn't a big deal yet.
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
Like, you know,
Same Love had just come out and was, you know, just starting to gain some traction when he came on the show. So he wasn't a huge star.
Kirby Wilbur wrote that song. About
who are you thinking of, Luke? Because obviously you must have something chambered.
That's a good question. Well, on LiveWire, we had this woman on named Wendy McClendon Covey.
I thought you were going to say Melissa Etheridge.
You know what's funny about that's probably a good example too. The interesting thing about the Melissa Etheridge thing is that she was actually super great.
Yeah, yeah.
Like really nice, and also like I'm not into Melissa Etheridge's music at all. But I will tell you something interesting. When she got on stage and started singing, it was like, God damn!
Your butthole wept.
I mean, it was already weeping because I had some Olestra earlier, you know,
you had some wow chips.
That's kind of, you know how I do, Kevin. And the problem is I had already had two French dips at Goldie's and then the wow chips. It was a bad deal. No, I would say absolutely. Melissa Etheridge is one of those people that we put on live. Well, I can't speak for the producers, but I was like, well, that's not the music I'm into. But on the other hand, that will put a lot of butts in the seats. And I think we were in like a, I don't know what it was, like 1,200 person theater or something. And probably, you know, 800 of those 1,200 people were probably there because of Melissa Etheridge. But that ended up being a thing where she was actually really nice and
right.
happy to talk and was like a really good singer. And I was kind of like, I told the producer, she did two. What happened was we were only going to have her do one song because there's like only time for one song.
Uh-huh.
But I realized quickly that she was like maybe the best element of the show so far. So I said to her on stage, I was like, could you do another song? And I guess she had been asking to do another song, but they had told her no. So she looked at me with so much happiness and gratitude to get to do another song. And then
wow.
I was like, wow, I really broke the spirit of this Grammy winner.
That's pretty
cool. She was just like, oh, I can do another song? I was like, yeah, please. Like, I was like, wow, this has gotten out of hand. But I'm trying to think of who we've put on the show who is... So this woman, Wendy McClendon Covey, her claim to fame is she was on Reno 911. She was in Bridesmaids.
Oh, yeah. The blonde woman?
The Bergs.
Yeah, yes.
Yes.
And we had her on, and that was one of these things where it was like, she's pretty famous, and I really liked Reno 911. So, and I also liked Bridesmaids, for that matter. So I was like, oh, she'll be cool. Like, my whole plan is to mostly ask her about Reno 911. And, like, somebody comes to me, like, 5 minutes before the show and says, she... refuses to talk about Reno 911, Bridesmaids, or anything that...
what?
And this is when, like, the Goldbergs had only had, like, one episode on television, so there wasn't even anything to really talk about. And so I go over to her, and she's, like, super made up. That's the other weird thing, because on the shows like Reno 911, she was always kind of, like, this sort of bigger...
You know, I'm sorry, let me...
You wouldn't think of her as being this sort of stunning beauty, but she's clearly, like, I guess to get on the Goldbergs or whatever, she had, like, gone on some crazy-ass, you know, slow carb. She
it's interesting. It's interesting that you bring that up, Luke, because I've come across that Goldberg show, and...
Is that any good?
No, I mean, it's... No,
well, I actually,
no.
I don't know. I mean... And I actually found it... more watchable than, but you're in the majority, Kevin, of the people.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed fine or whatever, but the whole time all I could fixate on was, this is crazy, I was going, is that chick from Reno 911 the whole time? And my other thought was, if that's her, she's really made up.
Yeah, so she was like super made up in the green room of this show in Portland where everybody's basically wearing like fucking hemp, you know, bags from the grocery store they've fashioned into some kind of bizarre sandal. Like, it's a very low-key environment, and she's, like, done up, like she's about to go on Carson. And I walk up to her to try to talk her into letting us talk about Reno 911, and I say to her, like, hey, I just think we have such, people are such fans of that show. And she goes, I just, you know what, whether it's shows or men, I just leave the past in the past. And I'm like, that's great, but that's not going to really help us. And then her husband, who's this, like, 6'4 fucking weirdo who's, like, her manager in the way that, like, everybody famous, whether a man or a woman, has somebody less famous who's married to them, and they have to come up with something for that person to do. In the case of Jim Gaffigan, it's his wife, Jeannie Gaffigan, who, if you go to her website, and I highly recommend everybody does, she lists herself as an Emmy Award-winning producer because she produced and wrote the opening of his comedy special that won an Emmy. And here's the opening of Jim Gaffigan's comedy special. He's in a car riding to the theater, and he gets to the theater, and it says Jim Gaffigan on the marquee, and he gets out and goes in. That was Jeannie Gaffigan's contribution. So Wendy McClendon Covey has this big, weird lunk of a husband who says to me, I say to her, I go, hey, I really like the Goldbergs, because I did. I watched one episode and I enjoyed it. I was like, I really like the Goldbergs. And he stands up and he kind of like comes in really close to me and goes, well, good, because that's what I want you to talk about.
Oh, Jesus.
And I was just like, back off, Lurch.
What? At this point, do you just want to say, like, thanks for coming, but no thanks? I know you probably can't, obviously, in that situation, but how much did you want to kind of do that?
So bad. Because you guys know me, I'm aggressive. Like, if I feel like someone's disrespecting me, I get really aggressive.
Oh, for
sure. And you're right, Kevin, I couldn't, because there's so many other, like, things involved, and there's this theater people waiting for this thing, and there's, like, I can't, like, I'm not the captain of the ship, even though I'm the host. I'm not allowed to just be, like, kick guests out in the green room.
Right.
So I couldn't, and she was on stage, she was so bizarre. Like, she wasn't even not nice. By the way, she agreed to talk about those old shows, but then when she got on stage, she just kind of wouldn't. Like, she, you know, she got her start, like, doing Groundlings or one of those, you know, improv groups in L.A. that are really influential.
You know what the key to improv is?
What's that?
You know what the key to improv is?
Never talk about Reno 911.
Close. Isn't it never say no?
The interview was so bizarre, and it was really one of those things where we put her on because we thought she was pretty well known.
Right.
Had all these rules, was a weirdo, had this old weirdo lurker husband, and then was also pretty bad on stage. And the main overriding kind of reasoning for it was, well, she's famous, you know?
Yeah.
I picture her husband as Tom Noonan playing the Tooth Fairy in the movie Manhunter. Just a very creepy, tall albino-looking gentleman. That's what I'm. That's what I'm picturing when you.
Here's what he's really into, because this is how petty my shit is. I'll tell you what I did after the show.
Yeah.
I went to Cassidy's, which is a restaurant that serves food, really good food, until 2 a.m. I got my usual, which is a grilled cheese sandwich and tomato soup. I drank a glass of wine. I went back to the hotel. I Facebook stalked him. He's really into motor scooters.
What?
Of course he is.
The thing is, he's like in a motor scooter club. That's what he does. He's in a motor scooter club in like Burbank, and he like threatens radio hosts over what his wife doesn't want to talk about. Seems to be what animates this dude.
He must look like one of those twins that ride the fat twins that ride the mini bikes.
Not that fat, but yes, someday he will be Guinness Book of World Records.
Just engulfing the whole vehicle.
In the Guinness Book of World Records, yeah, everyone knows that.
What do you think the rest of those guys' life was like?
It was all biscuits and gravy, man. Yeah, literally.
Lots of potlucks at Eagles and Elks clubs. That's what I'm guessing.
I just mean, like, do you think that they, like, they embraced the attention? Because, like, everybody likes the idea of people knowing who they are, but then did they have to just always ride those motorbikes everywhere?
Right.
How many 13-year-old boys got autographs from those guys? That's what I want to know.
I wonder how bad their, like, joints and sciatica was, like, just really, like, they'd gotten to a point where they physically couldn't ride the mini bikes anymore, but their manager kept telling, the masses want it,
yeah,
Daryl.
You got to get back on there, Barry.
Daryl, Jim, you need to ride the mini bike.
You guys, we're doing a show in Poughkeepsie. We've got the guy with the crazy long fingernails and the super tall lady named Sandy.
Talent. Guy with the fingernails, really talented photographer. Most people don't know
that's
that.
That's right. Let's strip the fingernails into that like velvet sack, like a Crown Royal sack.
The shitty thing about it, though, is there's always a bit of fingernail in the frame when he takes the picture. Yeah. Yeah.
Luke.
What do you guys, I'm sorry, Roden, I'm sorry that I'm just firing a series of questions at you guys. But
no, not at all.
What do you guys think it is about, like, the maturation process or the sort of human development that you are obsessed with the Guinness Book of World Records at some point when you're a kid?
I really don't know, but probably around 11, I was absolutely obsessed with it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, and you guys remember getting the Scholastic order book or
the
something
forms,
like that.
Yeah.
That you'd pick out the books that you want to order, and they'd give them to you at school.
If
what a fucking
rich.
Racket that was, right?
If you're rich, you'd get
exactly.
Those books.
Thank you, Dodrell.
Yeah.
I didn't come from rich people like the Rodens of Indianola. I'd friggin' save my allowance up and get a goddamn Garfield eraser that didn't work for shit.
Just smeared the graphite all over the paper. But you know what? God damn it, it was still Garfield and it was still cool, right?
Hey, yeah. Man, I only got to order one book a year. And it was usually like, oh, God, 1 year I got the Garfield Halloween book.
Man.
Oh, so good. He was in a pirate costume.
Oh, hilarious. Hilarious.
Just want to eat it up.
My
but, yeah.
mom, like about, I don't know how many years ago, like 5 years ago, my mom at a garage sale picked up probably 20 Garfield books.
Oh, man.
And she put them in their bathroom. And one, like Thanksgiving, I just decided, I mean, I was clearly having some sort of bowel trouble.
You did
by
not.
By the way, my family's Thanksgiving meal is traditionally a giant bowl of Wow chips. I was sitting in the bathroom and I just thought, you know what would be an interesting experiment? I'm going to read every one of these Garfield books until I laugh aloud.
That's a lot of reading, my friend.
Got through all of them. Pretty much. I mean, maybe it was more. Maybe I read five of them. But I read a lot of Garfield and at no point laughed aloud. And the weird part is when I was a kid, I thought Garfield was the most hilarious thing that had ever been created in human history.
Sure, yes. But then,
every
kid did. But then did you find, did you ever get into Calvin and Hobbes?
I liked the animation or whatever you call it. Like, I liked the drawings, but I didn't get now, like, as an adult, I know it's all this. It's about sort of what Hobbesian philosophy and all this other shit. But I didn't get any of that stuff.
Well, I didn't get the philosophy aspect of it, but I thought that, you know, that's what I moved on to after Garfield. That was like the funniest shit. And it still holds up today. I still have a Calvin and Hobbes book.
You know what does not hold up? Archie.
No. Nor does Heathcliff.
Well, if you're talking about Heathcliff, I mean, if you're talking about just the actual panels drawn or whatever.
Yeah.
But the Heathcliff cartoon was pretty money. I mean, that was pretty good stuff.
Have you seen
it? But why did that fish skeleton explode on its own?
I don't know why it did that.
It's like, even as a kid, that bothered me. I was like, it was just like, is it alive still?
Makes no sense.
It made no sense. I'll tell you what, go back and find the YouTube theme, like find a video on YouTube of the theme, the beginning credits of that. It's pretty amazing, man. And the guy that wrote the song is like the guy that like owns Saban Entertainment or whatever.
Yeah, he's a huge supporter of Hillary Clinton.
Seriously?
He's an Israeli, and he donated millions of dollars to Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Wow.
And he bought all of these old, basically lame cartoons that nobody wanted, and he created Saban or Sabin. And on his Wikipedia page, among other things, is that he wrote the theme song to Heathcliff. Heathcliff, he made all his money on Power Rangers, too.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because yeah. Power Rangers, he bought, I think, footage of a Japanese show and then just cut out all the dialogue and added in, because you don't know who's inside those suits. So they could make the dialogue around the fight scenes they wanted.
Yeah, right.
And so he repurposed that. And that's kind of, I think, has a large part of the reason why he's like made all this money or whatever.
How do you guys fucking know
but
this?
But the Heathcliff theme song, find that thing and rock out with your cock out, because that thing is really good.
Yeah, the guy's name is Haim Saban. Haim Saban.
Huh.
And he was like... He just lives in Beverly Hills and is crazy rich. And like I said, he's like a very liberal guy and is like basically supporting Hillary. I read an article about him like in the New Yorker. And then just as a passing thing, they just mentioned like, you know, he created this you know, network with these old kind of cast-off shows like Power Rangers made all this money and also wrote the, you know, Heathcliff theme song. And I was like, whoa, to that friend. Like,
why was that mentioned in
that? You buried the lead. He wrote that shit because that is a jam.
Hey,
what do you think is better, though? Heathcliff theme song or DuckTales theme song?
Oh, DuckTales.
I go with Heathcliff.
Far and
just
away.
Just because like, the lyrics don't make sense because they're like translated from Israeli. If you listen to the Heathcliff theme song, there's some stuff in there that you're like, what are they talking about?
Heathcliff, no one should terrorize the neighborhood. But Heathcliff just won't be undone. You should realize he can win it with you.
That's what I'm saying.
That was the lyrics.
That's it?
What?
I mean, that's it might be the middle part, but I remember being a kid thinking like, but Heathcliff just won't be undone. Playing pranks on everyone?
Yep.
Isn't that a thing too?
Yes.
Yeah.
The gang will race a pre.
Oh, yeah. And no one can deny they'll make a mystery.
Or make young history.
Have an alibi.
Yes, something like that.
No join in the Jubilee. The cats are something we all agree.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's way out there. I mean, DuckTales is like DuckTales, woo, right? Wasn't that?
Life is like a hurricane here in Duckville.
Yeah, yeah. Duckburg. Isn't
aeroplane.
It Duckburg?
It's a duck blur.
It's Duckburg.
It's all the mystery or rewrite history. My heart was in my throat every time that goddamn coal car went around that bend.
But you know,
flew off.
You've got the full power of Disney behind you. They better damn well craft a good
they
song.
They brought it, man.
Yeah,
they
on.
Brought it. They brought it.
Come on.
Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been a lot of fun chatting with you and catching up.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you for having me. I apologize. I took this to the places I took it.
No, not at all. This has been great. Been fantastic. So, Luke, would you like to plug your wares before we leave?
Yeah, I'm tweeting. It's Ian Carmel. getting some pretty good reactions there. I did that show, TBTL, that we've talked about before. That's at TBTL.net.
Dodrell, where can we find you, man? What's coming up next for SOD?
Stackadimes.com, Camaro_Kev.
You always sound so mad.
I am. Because it's
why
like
are you so mad?
I'm mad because it's just like I'm like sending people to a website that really has nothing there until we put a show up there, and I'm sending them to my Twitter page where I talk about what happens with Rick the Jet Rufus and other lame. I don't use my Twitter for anything other than my other stupid podcast about fighting that no one gives a shit about. So that's why I get angry, Luke. Can I have that? For myself?
Yeah,
can I do that?
You absolutely can, my friend.
Stackadimes.com.
See, you could have answered my question earlier with, I am living my nightmare right now. Nobody's listening.
Absolutely. That's what it is.
At least you probably have one unique view. I have zero.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
All right. Good night. Clubs and sticks and bats and balls for nuclear dicks with their dialect draws that come from a parking lot town.
when nothing lives in the sun. Don't make me a target. Don't make me a target. When he reached back in his mind, feels like he's breaking the law. There's something back there he got that nobody
knows. All right, folks. Excuse me. Oh, my God. I hope you enjoyed that. Hey, remember, next week, we're doing Hash of the Titans with Dew206.com and Goose Island Beer Company. So check that out. Follow us on Twitter at Air Raid Net. Follow Dew206 at Dew206. And follow Goose Island Beer Company at Goose Island, all on Twitter, and enter for your chance to win a trip to Lollapalooza 2015 in Brazil. Yeah, that's right. Brazil. Expenses paid, man. Pretty easy to enter just by tweeting at all of us. So do that, won't you? Okay. Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. I had a great time talking at you this week. Let's see. Next week coming up. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. We have a great conversation with a wonderful author. Joe Guppy, that's coming up next week. He's got this book out called My Fluorescent God, and it is insane and intense and crazy and amazing. Such an amazing story. So I hope you guys tune in for that, because he has got a story to tell, my friends. It's a really good one. So tune in next week for that, and a whole bunch of more stuff. Whole bunch of more stuff coming up for you guys in the weeks ahead here on the Air Raid Podcast. Okay. Hey, remember, also, oh my God, remember what we're doing here. Take the pledge, right? Just like on Mike Pesca's show. The gist, we're stealing this idea, although we did it a little while back, even before the gist existed. But we're doing it again, and we hope you guys take the pledge and pledge to not pay money to us, but pledge to tell somebody about the Air Raid Podcast or sign somebody up for the Air Raid Podcast that you think might like it. You know, we've got tons of musicians, tons of comedians, tons of great people coming in here and chatting with us. Including writers like Joe Guppy and directors of film and television like Lynn Shelton and Megan Griffiths. I mean, come on, people. If you think somebody might like it, tell them about it. Get them interested in the Air Raid Podcast and subscribe them to the show. Steal their phone for a little bit. Take it to the bathroom and sign them up on iTunes for the Air Raid Podcast. And also, you know, give us a little star rating there. Okay. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Please take the pledge, and we'll see you next week with author Joe Guppy. All right, this is Don't Make Me a Target by Spoon. We'll be back next week with more The Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Have a good one, everybody. Target. No, don't make me a target.